Hi, this is Michael Buffer, and welcome to the Box Hard Podcast.
Hello, everyone. This is Mikey Garcia.
This is the monster from the swamp, Regis Ruru Progre.
Hey, what's up? This is King Carlos Molina, former IBF world champ.
This is Michael, the bounty hunter, 2012 Olympian and your people's champ.
This is Charlie Edwards, flyweight champion of the world.
This is Fast Eddie Chambers, and you're listening to the Box Hard Podcast with my main man, Joey Cosmo.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 439 of the Box Hard Podcast. I'm your host, Joey Coastman. I'm joined, as ever, by former heavyweight world title challenger, the main man himself, Mr. Fast Eddie Chambers. Eddie, how you doing this week, sir?
I'm doing great, brother. How you feeling?
Always good when speaking with you, Eddie. We're going to dive straight into the review part of the show as per usual. We're going to start here at the Kingdom Arena in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. It was live on DAZN pay-per-view. It was live on Sky Sports pay-per-view. That's where I watched it. Let's discuss. Going to start with Roman Fury. Nice win for Tyson Fury's brother. Now 4-0. A points win there over four rounds against Martin Svark, who was 2-0. He was undefeated. He loses his O. Also on the card, Jack McGann, the undefeated prospect, 9-0 with a draw, knocked out in the first round by Louis Green. I did say on last week's show that Louis Green was worth a punt. Unbelievable scenes, man. Unbelievable. Jack McGann down in the first round. Right hook prior to the stoppage. Louis Green now 17-4. Jack McGann 9-1 with a draw. I think Louis Green said at the press conference, you know, he was offered the fight, I believe, on late notice. He said he got the call when he was on his way home from work, from his day job. And like I say, turns up in Saudi, gets the first round knockout. He was 4-1 for the KO. I think he was about 2-1 just to win any method. But yeah, he hurt McGann instantly with body shots right away in the first round. And he got that highlight reel stoppage later on in the round. Total demolition job, really was. Just a step too far for McGann. I think they were overlooking Louis Green. I don't know why, but a lot of people, including myself, made a little bit of change on that fight there. Fantastic stuff for Louis Green. I think he showed that in the post-fight interview. He's a real character. He's a genuine, you know, normal guy. And Jack McGann will have to come again. We will see. All the best to him and his comeback. And yeah, just again, just amazing for Louis Green. What a fantastic fight for him. Also on the card, let's go now to this one. Mark Chamberlain now 15-0. A TKO for him in the fourth round against Gavin Gwynn, who's now 17-3 with a draw. It was for the vacant WBA Intercontinental Lightweight title. Gavin Gwynn TKO'd in round four, like I say. Gwynn's eye swelled up like a golf ball in the first round. It was a little bit unlucky, I think, to take that much damage early on, and it really changed how the fight would have probably played out. You know, I did pick Chamberlain to win by knockout, but perhaps not under those circumstances. But yeah, you know, once he turned Gwynn pretty much into a one-eyed fighter, the writing was on the wall. Gwynn hung in there, you know, he showed his mettle. I think he had a brave corner. I don't think he probably should have been fighting on with that eye, but he took a beating for a few rounds and then the corner threw the towel in and saved their man for another day. Cannot wait for the next fight in Chamberlain's career. I'd love to see him in with Sam Noakes. But like I say, I always thought he'd win that. I wasn't impressed with Gwynn last time out against, the 47-year-old dancing Italian. He was pretty bad that night there. He looked like he'd been hurt a few times in that fight. And I just thought to myself, look, Mark Chamberlain hits a bit too hard. He's a bit too strong. I think he's going to probably stop Gavin Gwynn. Again, good odds for that to happen. I think it was something like 12-5. So I tell you what, I had a really nice week of betting on the boxing. I even landed a one bet that was 50-1. What else did we have on the card? Justice Hooney, now 9-0, a unanimous decision against Kevin Lorena, who sadly lost his mother the night before the fight. That was real sad stuff. Kevin Lorena now 30-3. It was for the vacant WBO global heavyweight title. A lot of people felt that Justice Hooney would go in there and stop Kevin Lorena. Kevin Lorena said he didn't want to pull out the fight despite losing his mother, and he wanted to use it as further motivation for him. He probably did manage to use that, you know. He had a good start to the fight. Then he kind of let it slip after a few rounds, around about the midway point. Justice Hooney was looking good. But then Kevin Lorena came on late again and hurt Justice Hooney, particularly in that last round. I think Justice Hooney, maybe they need to just pump the brakes with him a little bit. It was a big step up for him, but he was a little bit fortunate there that it was a 10-rounder, not a 12, I think. What else did we have on this card? We saw Israel Madrimov as well move to 10-0 with a draw, a TKO for him in round 5 against Magomed Kurbanov, now 25-1. He does finally lose his O. A lot of people felt he should have lost it a couple of times. It was for the vacant WBA World Super Welterweight title. Fantastic performance there from Madrimov, who'd been a bit quiet, really. He seemed to have kind of... he had a bit of momentum behind him at one point a couple years ago. It seemed like it slowed down a little bit. I wasn't even sure when he last fought. But he was back with a bang, quite literally. Let's touch on this now as well for the WBC featherweight world title. Ray Vargas now 36-1 with a draw. He's still the WBC featherweight world champion. A split draw over 12 against the UK's Nick Ball, who's now 19-0 with that draw. Vargas down in round 8 and round 11. Listen, it was a really, really interesting fight. It had a few kind of momentum shifts, I guess. Early on, Nick Ball was just unable to get past the jab of Vargas. You know, he was falling short. He was missing wildly. Vargas was just keeping it long. And Nick Ball was unable to get in range at all. He was looking one-dimensional in that ring. And he was just trying to lunge with these big hooks. He was missing, like I say. And Vargas as well, what I really did like is that he was targeting the body. So he was keeping it long and targeting the body of the, you know, the much smaller but much stronger man. I think it was very, very clever to have done that. And he was also whipping in some lovely right and left hooks from range. Ball took him well, you know, but Vargas showed fantastic tactics there. Vargas was also backing Ball up as well. We don't often see Ball backed up, but Ball was quite ineffective when he was pushed back as well. Ball did have a big round kind of against the momentum of the fight in round 7. He definitely hurt Vargas. He stiffened his legs and he finished the round well. And then obviously in round 8, Ball grabbed hold of Vargas and threw him around. But when Vargas kind of landed on his feet, because he kind of swung him around, if you like, and after he swung him around, Ball hits him with a shot as he's, you know, not sort of balance right. It was more like a, you know, he swings him around. By the time he turned back around, he took a punch and, you know, he goes down. It shouldn't have been called a knockdown, but a bad call from the referee there. I noted at the time that this 10-8 round for Ball could be big on the cards, and I didn't want him to, at that point, I didn't want him to win the fight based on that BS call of a knockdown. In the end, of course, I'm kind of jumping forward a bit here, but I'm glad that they did give him that BS knockdown, because that kept his O for him, because obviously it ends up being a draw, and we're going to get to that in a sec. But like I say, Nick Ball did build off of that in that 8th round. I gave him round 9 and 10, and he definitely seemed to have more spring in his step at that point. Vargas looked a little bit tired, and Ball did start to boss things. Bull then scored the legitimate knockdown in round 11, a right hook, and Bull won the 12th round as well. He did really, really well in the second half of the fight. He took some thunderous body shots throughout the fight and didn't seem bothered by Vargas's body shots. He didn't tire at all. And I actually think, you know, we talk about 15 round fighters. I think that Nick Bull could do 15 rounds. I think Vargas showed a little bit of a blueprint maybe to beat Nick Bull, but yeah, for me, Bull won handily in the end. And like I say, I'm happy now that was a 10-8 round for a knockdown that shouldn't have been, because he would have lost the fight, which is mental. My scorecard in the end, I do just want to pull it up because I'm pretty sure I've got it somewhere. I had it to Bull by 4 rounds. Some people even had it wider than that. Just looking at it now, I gave Bull all of the rounds in the second half of the fight, so round 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12. And of course, two of those rounds were 10-8 rounds, you know? And I gave Vargas 5 of the first 6 rounds as well. So yeah, I thought it was quite easy to score the fight, and a lot of people were very unhappy with those scorecards. Be great to see a rematch. I did think it might have just been a bit too soon for Nick Bull. I didn't really understand the rush, but I suppose money speaks, or money talks. And I didn't think it made much sense, but it was a winnable fight. And yeah, he's going to feel hard done by for sure. I feel for him. Also on the card, what have we missed out? Or is it just the two main ones left? Let's have a look. Let's go to it here. The co-main, Eddie Gilles Zhang, 26-2 with a draw now. He dropped a majority decision over 12 rounds to one of my favourite heavyweights in the world, Joseph Parker, now 35-3. Parker down in round 3, down again in round 8. It was for the WBO interim heavyweight world title. A few notes again. Parker started very slowly in the fight. I didn't think that was a good idea. It was very slow-paced early on. Zhang was a very happy man. He was moving Joe around the ring and, you know, just following him around, really, just kind of guiding him where to go. Joe was using up more energy as well than Zhang in those moments there. Zhang had just pop out the jab. Joe looked a little bit uncomfortable, and Joe was just backing up too much. You know, he didn't want to be on the ropes or in the corners, really. He needed to get himself in the centre of the ring a little bit, I felt. He got caught with a long straight left as he was pulling out in that third round. Down he went. Like I say, I didn't think he was particularly hurt because he was pulling out at the time, and obviously he got back up, within the 10 seconds. And he did after that take a few more good shots. He took him well. I say he took him well. He definitely was bothered by the shot that Zhang landed. But I think for his sake, thank goodness he was pulling out at the time, and he kind of took a bit of the power off the shot as he was moving backwards. Otherwise, it would have been a lot worse for him. But yeah, he got back up. Definitely seemed maybe stunned a little bit or buzzed a little bit, because, like I say, took a couple shots, but he took them well. 10-8 round for Zhang, unquestionably. Parker won the next round. I gave him that fourth round for sure. He decided to finally start letting his hands go. He got the better of the action. He needed that round as well, I think, to get the respect of Zhang. I also gave Joe the next two rounds. He was just nicking these rounds. Zhang wasn't doing much. It was a slow-paced fight again at that period of the fight, but it was intense. I gave Zhang the seventh round. I felt he caught Joe with some heavy punches in that round. Again, Joe took him well. In the eighth, Joe was having a great round, and he also definitely landed the best punch of the fight up to that point, but got caught on the temple, goes down again. Really, really, really bad moments for him, because, like I say, he was having a good round, and he built a bit of momentum as well. And then bang, loses another 10-8. So I was really worried for him at that point. I think a lot of people at that point, you know, were looking at the odds in play and realizing that Zhang was Parker was about 7-1 to win. So Zhang, they really favoured at that point. I did, however, though, give Joe the last 4 rounds of the fight. I ended up on my card having it 113-113. I had it a draw. Zhang obviously was really tired late on, and Joe boxed smart late on. You know, he put the pressure on, he stole rounds, and he was great down the back stretch of the fight. You know, it was smart pressure from Joe, and it was defensive first pressure, lots and lots of feints and stuff like that. But as I said to you, Eddie, the other day, I think we spoke the night of the fight, Zhang was biting on those feints every single time. Yeah, Joe closed strong. He needed to close strong. And yeah, my card in the end, 113-113. A lot of people scored it to Parker. I didn't see many people at all score it to Zhang. But it was a close fight. It was definitely a close fight. Maybe I was a little bit harsh. You know, I gave Zhang the first three. I think some people didn't do that. Obviously, a 10-8 in there as well in round three. Gave Parker the next three. Gave Zhang the next two, including again another 10-8. And then, like I say, the last four rounds of the fight was all Parker. We're going to see an instant rematch as well, because Joe said that in his post-fight interview. They said, what do you want to do next? He said it's not his choice. There's a rematch clause, so he's expecting to be fighting Zhang again. Yeah, again, Eddie, you know, they were saying it's a bigger win than Deontay Wilder. I don't know if I would say that, but, you know, it's another fantastic win for Joe. I think we all like Joe. We all think highly of Joe. But yeah, just another great win for him.
I think they're just saying that about the Deontay Wilder fight because this came post Deontay Wilder fight. If there was no Deontay Wilder fight, don't get me wrong, he would have gotten a lot of credit for this win. But let's be honest, Deontay Wilder's the biggest name on his resume up to this point as far as a win. So I think that is literally not just that fight, though, you know, of a collab. He's had a few fights, you know, aside from those fights, some of which weren't really great performances, but they've been wins. You understand what I'm saying? So him then going and beating a Deontay Wilder, most didn't expect that. Most expected him to end up getting caught and get stopped. You know, we like Joe. We figured that Joe has the ability to win, but we figured that he would get hit at some point. And, you know, most of the time, that's all Deontay needs. But make no mistake, that fight, that win still to me, and I would think that most people who understand, you know, a little more about, you know, boxing really sees that as a bigger win, even though, you know, Zhang is on the upswing. But he's still, you know, it's hard to say that Zhang is a, you know, a bigger name. Obviously, he's not a bigger name than Wilder. So that Wilder win paved the way for this to be as big a win as it was, and especially how he got dropped twice in the fight. So yeah, it shows a great deal about Joe, what kind of fighter he is, also what kind of, how tough he is, what kind of person he is too. So it's a really, really good look. And to be quite honest, I've never actually formally met him, but damn, he seemed like a cool dude. So it's good to see him win, and I'm happy for him.
Yeah, I remember on last week's show you said if it goes a distance, then you would definitely favour Parker. Again, I said I really fancy Parker. I said that the much faster feet, the much faster hands. I don't think he used them to full effect at times, like I say, but the feints was huge. The feints were really working for him, man. And when he got the respect of Zhang, he kind of turned it around. Aside from that knockdown that he suffered late, you know, the temple shot in round eight, he was bossing things, you know, from about the fourth round onwards, really. So, yeah, brilliant stuff for Joe. So happy, like I say. Haven't spoke to him since the fight, but just over the moon. Over the moon. I'd love to see the AJ rematch. I don't know if it makes sense right now for both guys, but would love to see it, and I really give him a chance in that. What else will I say about it? What else is there to say? Yeah, and another one, like I say, that I said, I really fancied Joe in terms of odds and stuff like that. I think he was 2-1. So, like I said, you know, Joe Parker to win, Mark Chamberlain KO, Louis Green to win. You know, things were looking good for my bets. And yeah, the main event, Eddie, Anthony Joshua now 28-3, a knockout in round two against Francis Ngannou, now 0-2, Ngannou down in round one, and then twice in round two. The knockout was really, you know, a highlight reel one for sure. unbelievable. You know, I spoke to someone who said it's like Ngannou put his chin in the perfect position, like those machines that you get in the arcades where you put like a, you know, I guess a dollar in or whatever, and you punch the, like the punch bag, and it, you know, it says how hard you've hit it. His chin was right there. He walked right into a massive right hand, right, you know, right straight down the pipe, and it was brutal. But yeah, like I say, I'm going to let you talk more about it than myself, Eddie, but just in a nutshell, for me, I think I said to you as well, Alicia Baumgartner came out, said AJ's back to the top. You know, I don't get drunk off of AJ beating Otto Wallin, who he was super comfortable with and knew inside out. I don't get drunk off of AJ beating a guy that was 0-1, even though he gave Fury a good fight. Styles make fights, you know. I expected Joshua to win. I expected Fury to win, obviously, against Ngannou. It was a much closer fight, but I don't read anything into that. You know, I think it's a masterstroke from Eddie Hearn going and getting Francis Ngannou off the back of his fight with Fury, and he's now smashed Ngannou in that fashion and got people thinking that Fury AJ is back to being a 50-50 fight, which to me is absolute ludicrous.
Gotta agree with you 1,000,000%, but this is smart. Eddie Hearn is smart. He understands how to play this game. It's just it's quality matchmaking, it's quality promotion. You know, it's why he's one of the top guys out there right now. So, you know, And quickly how everybody forgets. This is why boxing is such a what have you done for me lately sport. Everybody forgets, and you know, he's talking about, oh, this AJ beats everybody. It's like, yo, you just forgot that he got kind of like his ass handed to him by Usyk twice in a row, two straight times. He might have won, what, four rounds in both fights? You know what I mean? Five or six rounds, maybe. You know, it's like you can't. But this is what happens. You forget about that as soon as you see the next fight. You know what I'm saying? And it's so genius. But this is what you do. You take advantage of an opportunity that you would only get in your dreams, to see how difficult, how much trouble Tyson had with him. He's a strong guy. He looks, man, he, oh man, and God, then they talk about, oh, maybe boxing isn't this and that. Talk about how, because Ngannou was able to do so well with Tyson, then he gets in there with AJ and gets knocked out in the second round, gets demolished in two rounds, and it's like, damn. You know, maybe we were maybe it wasn't even so much as just thinking they were overzealous about Ngannou. It's just that they're like, damn, maybe AJ's that guy now. And then this is just what happens. And it's and what's driving this is the lay fan that doesn't really understand the nuances and the ins and outs of boxing. So they just see a guy get knocked out and they say, oh, this guy got to be the best guy. And then Eddie Hearn gets on there and he talks about how great AJ is. And there's no heavyweight out there that's going to be able to beat him. And then that's on the back also, right, of Joe Parker then beating Deontay Wilder. So now it's like, oh, that's that whole issue of that mystique of what would happen in that fight is now gone too, to a degree. And it's just because people don't know. They do not understand that stylistically certain fights favor certain fighters and the triangle theories don't work. They don't understand this to the degree we do, Joe. And I think this is what, and this is how these things are created. Some people, believe it or not, out there think Jake Paul is one of the best fighters in the world right now. There are people out there that believe that. There are people that out there don't watch enough boxing to know. There's people that don't watch enough combat sports to know who some of these guys are and really to the degree of level that these guys are above others. They look at fame as being, oh, he's great. No. There are very non-famous fighters who are the best guys out there that some people don't even know their names. How about our Japanese guy, you know what I mean? Naoya Inoue, some guys can't even pronounce. He's one of the best fighters in the world, small guy, but nobody over here, not saying nobody, but no regular person over here would know who the fuck that is. You understand what I'm saying? And it all plays to this point that now this has created such a buzz. But it's great. It's great for boxing to a degree. I'm not totally mad at it. I think it kind of helps my guy Tyson too. So, hey, hopefully these fights get made, you know? But it's just crazy how this happened. You know what I mean? It's crazy how fast these things transpire. But, hey, like I said, it's boxing and it's what have you done for me lately. So there we go.
And a perfect example as well of that triangle theory took place on the undercard, you know? Obviously, Parker beat Zhang. Zhang stopped Joyce twice. Joyce stopped Parker, you know? And then Parker goes and beat Zhang. So, yeah, like I say, yeah, you know, I don't know, man. I just think... You know, Fury's not really known for that, you know, those like first and second round knockouts. Like, that's not really his style. You know, he's more of a boxer. Yeah. I know, Eddie. I'm just saying it.
I agree with you 100%. It's just that we'll fight. Not me and you, Joe, but a lot of people will. And honestly, we're just two of. There's a lot of us out there, don't get me wrong, but it's not nearly as many of people who don't watch and they're only hopping on this. And then there's MMA fans who aren't even complete real MMA people who really don't even know that. Then they watch boxing and then they make the decisions based on what they see. And it's just, it's rough. It's rough, but at the end of the day, eventually we'll set them all straight. You know what I mean? And that's just the way it has to be.
Yeah, like I say, even a lot of people were backing Francis Ngannou. That's why the odds were that close. When you look at those odds now, it looks ridiculous the way he got splattered on the canvas. But hopefully he's okay. Hopefully he comes back again. I wouldn't mind seeing him again against a couple of other fighters. A few names got thrown around. There's a lot of weird, weird fights that could happen. Like, wouldn't mind randomly seeing him in with someone like Andy Ruiz. I don't know why. I just think it'd be fun. But anyway, moving on. Moving to the final card to mention of the review part. Friend of the show, Bradley the Stingray, now 17-1. A TKO for him in the first round against Patrick Polasic, who's now 2-17 with a draw. Polasic down from a left to the body just before the stoppage. So good win there for Bradley Ray. All the best to him. That one took place at the Winter Gardens, by the way, in Blackpool, Lancashire, United Kingdom. It's now, though, time to wrap up part one and to welcome this week's special guest. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the new WBA featherweight champion of the world. It is, of course, Mr. Raymond Ford. Ray, welcome to the show, my man.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's my pleasure. So, Ray, it's the first time we've had you on, so welcome once again. My first question, and the new champion of the world, has it sunk in yet?
Nah, not really. In the moment, it kind of did, but now I'm just, like, more so on, like, what's next for me. So that's where I'm at with it now.
And talk me through the fight, man. I mean, it had twists and turns. Kolmatov was ahead on two of the scorecards going into that last round. You needed a stoppage, which you got with like 9 or 8 seconds left on the clock. Pure drama, man.
Yeah, it was a fun fight.
Talk me through it, though, because obviously he started quite strong. You took a few rounds to warm into it, and then obviously the finish was as dramatic as it can simply get.
In the beginning stages of the fight, he basically kind of was like a little rough to deal with. He had like good distance, good footwork. His footwork was better than what I expected. So I had to make an adjustment and basically change up the game plan and start stepping to him. And as time went on, he was throwing a lot of punches, but they wasn't landing. And then the whole time he was like throwing a lot of punches, I knew he was going to break down eventually. And that's what happened.
And you touched on it there, you know, like we'd never seen him fight in that style before. We gave him a lot of credit of being this come forward power puncher, but he showed a lot of dynamic to his game, going backwards, boxing with the jab out. But yeah, it was a brilliant fight. I was happy for you, but I felt really bad for Kolmatov in one. On the other hand, you know, because imagine that being stopped with just 9 seconds left, Ray. Must have been crazy to be on the end of that for him.
I mean, yeah, he probably didn't know it was 7 seconds left, like, in the fight. But I'm pretty sure it did sting a little bit once they told him after the fight was over. But you know, it's boxing. Things happen.
And you did tweet afterwards saying that Kolmatov was the best fighter you've faced so far. You said he'll become champion one day. You still feel that way?
Absolutely. He's a great fighter. He's gonna be tough to deal with for anybody. It's definitely, you know, a lot of other fighters that I feel like that's getting hyped up that he would definitely beat. Even like some of the world champions, the other world champions, he'll definitely beat those guys too.
And I want to touch on your trainer as well, Coach Ant. I know Coach Ant myself. I've been out there in the States and been to his gym. But yeah, just a word on him, because I've seen a lot of people praising his corner work. He's getting a lot of recognition off the back of this. Very good underrated trainer, Ray.
Yeah. Coach Ant definitely underrated, but I'm happy now that he's starting to get his flowers because he put a lot of work in. And day in and day out, we always grinding and working on new things. So I'm happy for him.
Shout out to Coach Ant. In the ring, right after the fight, when emotions were high, you hinted that it might be your last fight at 126. Was it maybe a bit too soon to have made that statement right there and then?
Nah, it's not. Anything that I say, I stand on it. But, you know, I always say in interviews, I would do another fight at 126 if it made sense, if the money was right or if it was for unification.
Yeah, I think, again, to revert back to your social media posts, you did say that you'd love for your next move to be a unification. Is that literally the most lucrative move for you next?
Possibly. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know. I got, like, a lot of options. Especially, you know, being with Matchroom, we got fighters that, well, we have a fighter at 130 that, you know, got a belt and we can mix in with. So we basically pretty much, we just got to see what happens. And yeah, it's just a waiting game right now.
And Ray, I talked to a lot of guys that win a world title, and that was their dream from being a young kid to win a world title one day. Once you've ticked that box, though, some guys struggle to pick a new goal to maintain that hunger because you've already ticked that massive box already. What is your new goal moving forward?
My new goal moving forward, just to win more belts and be in more big fights. That's the ultimate goal, just to, you know, keep getting big fights, keep getting better, and just showing the world that I am who I say I am.
And you touched on it as well. You know, there's opportunities at the weight above, potentially. You've got Cordina that holds a title. You were obviously referring to him. Ray, you very quickly, in my opinion, went from, like, prospect right into world champion. Now, of course, you're on top of the world. Having a belt makes it easier to capitalize on the moment, you know, to strike while the iron is hot, as they say. I know, look, 130 might be more comfortable, but commercially, I know the Cordina fight's there, I suppose, but do you think it's the right move, moving up so soon after winning a belt?
I got to listen to my body. Like I said, I don't know what the right move is right now. I just got to, you know, wait and see. I want big money fight or a unification fight, like I said. But if I don't get that, then I'm going to just listen to my body and move up. I'll still be able to, you know, do great things at 130, and I'll be able to get a belt and stay there longer.
And also, briefly, you'd mentioned about possibly fighting Nick Ball. He probably did enough on the weekend to win the fight. Obviously, you know, Ray Vargas managed to keep hold of the title. Does that mean that the Nick Ball fight is less likely to happen now?
No, the Nick Ball fight can definitely still happen. I know it'll be in Saudi Arabia. Eddie wanted me to be on that 5v5. So I'm pretty sure Eddie would do whatever it takes to make it happen.
Yeah, because you tweeted out something about, I think you said, what was the words? You said something along, I don't want to swear, but effed up the unification, but not the bag. I'm guessing that was the Nick Ball reference.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. Like I said, it's either big money fights or belts. It could be both or either or. So it's still a lot of money into the Nick Ball fight. So it's definitely something that could still be on the table.
And I've got an interesting question for you here as well. I know that straight after the fight against Kolmatov, you know, you were kind of hitting back at some people that criticized your performance. You were out there kind of atting a few people. But then you also tweeted the other day that you wanted to get right back into camp because you didn't like your performance at all. What didn't you like about your performance, Ray?
I just didn't like how I was kind of like too flat. And
in the early rounds?
Yeah, like in the early rounds, like it took me a minute to get my timing down. I could have put more punches together. It's a lot of different things, but you know, I'm my worst critic, so I'm always gonna find, you know, holes in my game and try to, you know, get better.
Okay, well, coming down to my last couple questions for you, Ray, I want to ask you this because I know you've probably got a real long list of names, but I like to ask, especially young guys like yourself, what are some of the names that you've sparred over the years? I'm sure you've been in many gyms sparring many great talents.
Yeah, I've been in the ring with Tyron Farmer, Stephen Fulton, Teofimo Lopez, Shakur Stevenson, Jermaine Ortiz, Keyshawn Davis. It's a few other fighters I really can't think right now. But I sparred Topalis, the 122-pounder who fought Inoue.
Yeah, Marlon Topalis.
Yeah, I sparred him getting ready for the Magdaleno fight. It's a lot of other fighters I sparred. Richardson Hitchens. It's been Jerron Ennis, a lot of different fighters.
Well, that's a crazy list, man. We've had most of those guys on the podcast, but that's a crazy, crazy list.
Yeah.
Right, just before we wrap things up, Ray, I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit here, but I'd like to ask this question to everyone that we speak to from overseas. We get some interesting answers. Favorite UK fighter? Just off the top of your head, it could be a guy that retired years ago, if you like. It can be a guy that's still fighting now. But who springs to mind?
I got a couple. I can name a couple. I like Prince Nassim. Now I like Dalton Smith. Dalton Smith, I like him. I like Ben Whitaker. And that's pretty much it right now.
That's interesting. That's some interesting names, man. That's why I love asking that question, because you've got a flashy Prince Nassim, you've got a flashy Ben Whitaker, and then not so flashy Dalton Smith, who seems to do all the basics very well. That's a good mix there, my friend. I like
his mentality too. He got a strong mentality.
Absolutely, absolutely. And shout out as well to Reese Bellotti.
Oh yeah,
he's on a bit of a run now. He's doing good things. Your former opponent.
Yeah, I'm proud of him.
Good stuff for him. Excellent, man. Just before we wrap it up, my friend, if you've got any closing words to the listeners, Ray, if you just want to sign out with a little message, like I say, it's fantastic to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, just, you know, keep following my journey, keep supporting me, and it's only bigger things is coming ahead now. I'm looking for, you know, bigger fights, unification fights, and just, you know, look for me to be at the top of my game in the future.
There we go. This man is here to stay. Listen, Ray, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show. Thank you for your time, and we'll speak again soon, no doubt.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Have a good one.
Okay, now it's time for part two on this week's show. This part, of course, the news. Few bits of news to mention, Eddie. We're going to start here, though, with May the 4th, Saturday, May the 4th, live on pay-per-view. It's going to be on Prime, Amazon Prime Video, PBC pay-per-view. Canelo Alvarez steps in the ring with Jaime Munguia. It's going down in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. Thoughts on the fight, Eddie? I'm going to come to you first.
Damn, I didn't even know about that. That's obviously it's news. There we go. But that's good. I mean, you know, it's kind of crazy that, you know, that's who he chooses to step up to at that, to this point in his career, goes right in, you know, guns blazing. But I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, why not? No guns, no glory. But yeah, interesting fight. I mean, I would like to see, you know, Canelo. I mean, again, how he deals with what Canelo brings to the table, and see really how good this kid really can be and really is, and whether he can really push Canelo. You know what I mean? You know, see what his style does with Canelo, and you know, see where Canelo is at this point. I mean, he's starting to get up in age, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's not still going to be able to do some, you know, great things. But you know, the experience is high now. But at the end of the day, I mean, Father Time is undefeated. So you know, these young, you know, new-ish kind of guys that are out here, yeah, you know, it's interesting, and I'm excited to see. I just want fighters to fight each other. I just want the top guys to fight each other and put it on the line. You know what I mean? And most fans, that's what most fans want, but even us hardcore guys want that too. So, yeah, I'm excited to see it. I would like to see the shakeup in boxing, you know, see what he could do in there. But, yeah, I'm not too sure about him winning that fight, but I still think it's a good fight.
Yeah, I think it will certainly deliver in terms of action. Munguia, still only 27 years of age, 43-0. I thought he was closing in on Mayweather's record, but perhaps not. Perhaps he's going for the Canelo payday here, and that could be the end of the undefeated streak. We'll have to wait and see. Youth's on his side, but yeah, in terms of even miles on the clock, I think he's probably took more punishment than Canelo has. Should be a good one though. Like I say, all Mexican war. Also in other news, Top Rank have signed super middleweight sensation Christian Mbili. It's a co-promotional deal there with Eye of the Tiger. Very, very good signing. I really, really like Christian Mbili. I think he's a fantastic super middleweight contender. Really fun fighter. I think he's got a very bright future. And it's great that he's signed a co-promotional deal with Top Rank. So hopefully we see some big fights for him in the US. What else do we have? I think we've got one or two other bits for you. Lauren Price will be stepping in the ring with Jessica McCaskill for the welterweight world title on May the 11th in Cardiff. It's a shame, really, because Ivana Habazin was supposed to be boxing Jessica McCaskill in Croatia, a big homecoming fight for her, obviously fighting McCaskill. McCaskill has now vacated the WBC title, so from my understanding, Ivana will still be boxing for a world title, but it won't be against McCaskill. She's decided to go a different direction, probably for more money. But she still has the WBA title, the IBO, and the Ring magazine. So she steps in with the UK's Lauren Price. Again, it goes down in Cardiff on May the 11th. I don't know if we've seen the undercard be announced just yet, but it's a good main event, I suppose, there. What else do we have? What else do we have? This one here is an interesting one. It's just been announced, actually, while we've been recording the show. May the 12th, we're going to see Carlos Cuadras stepping in the ring with Andrew Maloney and Nina Hughes of the UK stepping in the ring with Shanika Johnson. That is part of the Lomachenko-Cambosos undercard. So, yeah, I really like that fight. Really happy for Nina Hughes and Shanika Johnson, to be honest. Both girls, friends of the show. All the best, of course, to Andrew Maloney against Carlos Cuadras. Shaping up to be quite a good card there. Again, out there in Perth. That is it, though, for the news. Moving on to the preview part of the show. This one, we're going to start at the Madison Square Garden Theatre in New York, USA. It's going to be live on UFC Fight Pass. It's tomorrow night. We're going to see Cletus Seldon back in the ring, 27-1 in an 8-rounder against Jose Angulo, who's 16-7. Also on the card, we're going to see Joe Ward. We're also going to see the Albanian Bear, Reshat Matti. He's out again. And the main event, the Irish prospect, Callum Walsh. He's 9-0, good fighter. He steps in with Doron Yelusinov, who is the older brother of Daniil Yelusinov. not as good. But he's 11-3 with a draw, Yulusinovic, for the WBC Continental Americas Super Welterweight title over 10 rounds. Moving now to the Rainton Meadows Arena in Tyneham Wear, United Kingdom. Again, this one is on Saturday. It's an 8-rounder here at super featherweight between Thomas Patrick Ward, 33-1 with a draw. The one loss came to Otabek Kolmatov. He steps in the ring with Armani Bariki, who is 14-4 with two draws. I believe once upon a time got stopped in a couple of rounds to one of the Walsh brothers. Moving now to the big card that goes down at the Results World Arena in Birmingham, West Midlands. I really, really like this card as well. I think it's a fantastic card, pretty much from top to bottom. Where shall we start? We're going to start on the undercard, but which fight are we going to go to? Ezra Taylor, 7-0. He was supposed to be boxing Willie Hutchinson, I believe, and it seems like that fight's now off. I think they're both fighting on different shows, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway, Ezra Taylor in a 10-rounder against Prince Naughty, who's 11-2. Couldn't tell you the first thing about Prince Naughty. I'm having a look now. He's a southpaw. He's got 10 KOs from his 11 wins. That's interesting. Ghanaian fighter. Lost to Joe Ward. We spoke about him a moment ago. That was his last fight. That was 4 months ago. Okay, all the best to both guys there. Also on the card, the return to the ring for Joe Joyce, 15-2. Obviously coming off two back-to-back crushing defeats to Zile Zhang. He is back against Cash Alley, who's 21-2. Who, of course, made it onto the big stage once upon a time back in 2019 and got disqualified when he decided to bite David Price. He kind of disappeared, come back with a few wins. He's coming off a loss, though. So, Cash Alley, little bit of a madman, I guess. But 21-2, never been stopped. A lot of people, though, fancying Joe Joyce to absolutely walk through him. Interesting that Joseph Parker's trainer Andy Lee has come out and said that this could be a tough one for Joe Joyce. Also on the card, a battle of the undefeateds. We're going to see Ethan James, 12-0, stepping in the ring with Owen Cooper, who's 9-0. That one's over 10 rounds for the vacant English and WBO European welterweight titles. All the best there to both guys. Also on the card as well, Dennis McCann, 14-0 with a draw. It's for the vacant WBO Intercontinental Super Bantamweight title over 10 rounds. He steps in with Brad Strand of Liverpool, who's 11-0. Like I say, battle of the undefeateds again. Good win last time out for Brad Strand against Joshua John at York Hall. I was at that fight there. He looked pretty good there. I think McCann's going to have too much for Brad Strand, though, if I'm honest. Also on the card, friend of the show, Zach Parker, 23-1 in a 10-rounder against former world champion Tyron Zoyga, who's 27-1 with a draw. Still, the one loss on Zoyga's record was to Rocky Fielding by stoppage almost 6 years ago now. Got stopped in the 5th round there. Since then, he's had 5 fights. He's won 3 of them by KO, but they've been very, very low level. He's still quite young, though. He's only 31 years of age. It makes perfect sense for Zach Parker, really, if he can beat, you know, a former world champion. I'm expecting him to go and beat him very easily. I think he's probably going to stop him, and I wouldn't be surprised to see him stop him within the first 6. But it's a 10-rounder. All the best to Zach. Very, very nice guy. Also, Tyron Zoyga decided to release a pretty strange promo video earlier on in the week, which, yeah, it's pretty strange, but it's pretty hilarious. Also on the card, another battle of the undefeateds. We're going to see Pierce O'Leary, 13-0. It's over 10 rounds here for the WBC International Super Lightweight title. He steps in with Hovhannes Martirosyan of Belgium, who is 16-0 with 10 KOs. Just having a little look at his record. He's boxed Reynald Garrido back in 2021. He's a bit of a journeyman these days. No other real standout names. Pierce O'Leary, very, very, very technically sound fighter. Should be a good one there. Also on the card, defending his British middleweight title. It's going to be his first defense after dethroning Denzel Bentley. Nathan Heaney, 18-0, He steps in with Brad Paulz, who's 18-1. Paulz again, decent fighter, got the one loss to Tyler Denny. However, the loss has, you know, has aged quite nicely. You know, Denny's gone on to become European champion, so I don't think there's no real shame in that. He's on a heck of a run. It should be a good fight, to be totally honest with you. If this fight was made about a year ago, a lot of people would be saying that Brad Paulz would probably win this fight. The reason I say that is because Nathan Heaney has probably overachieved in a lot of people's eyes. There's a lot of people that used to criticize him. They said, nah, he's not really going to, you know, go too far. And honestly, there's people I respect hugely, and they were telling me that the Bentley against Heaney fight will only go one or two rounds, and Bentley's going to stop him very easy, very quickly. And, you know, they couldn't have got it, you know, they couldn't have got it more wrong. I also really bought into that. I thought that, you know, Bentley's going to have way too much for Heaney, but he's just been up in his game every single time. Again, I remember when Heaney boxed Jack Flatley. Again, a lot of people felt that he'd have enough to beat Heaney. So at this point, there's a lot of momentum behind him, and I'm going to side with the bookies. I favour him against Brad Paulz. But Brad Paulz is a good fighter, like I say, a little bit seasoned. You know, he's been in there with some decent fighters. Obviously back to winning ways as well after the Tyler Denny loss. But yeah, he's not a bad fighter at all. Like I say, all the best to him. What else do we have? Yeah, Liam Davies back in a good fight. Again, 15-0 Liam Davies, friend of the show. It's a 12-rounder for the vacant IBO Super Bantamweight World title. He steps in with Eric Ayala, the Mexican Danger Man, 15-1, 9 KOs. People will remember him coming over here and beating Lee McGregor last year. I say over here, came to Edinburgh, beat Lee McGregor at home. That was the same night that Cash Alley lost as well. And also the same night that Matty Harris got stopped by Konstantin Dovbychenko. So it was a bad night there in Edinburgh for a lot of the British guys. But like I say, could be a hard fight. I really believe in Liam Davies. I think he's got a very bright future. I think he could potentially go all the way. However, bit of a strange one last time out. You know, it was weird seeing him on the deck against Vincenzo Lafemina, who had a very, very, you know, unique style to him. But Liam Davies got the business done in the end, even though there was a moment where, you know, he was on the deck. Like I say, I don't think he was too hurt there at all. I think he's a great fighter, and I think he's going to probably win this fight easier than most people would think. I think Lee McGregor, you know, has showed a little bit of vulnerability, you know, after what fight was it? I think it was Vincent. Yeah, Vincent Legrand. Since that fight there, he was down against Vincent Legrand. He's had three fights. He managed to come back and stop Vincent Legrand, but he's had three fights since then, a draw, a win, and then obviously, and the win wasn't a great win against Alexis Kabor. People thought he'd stop him. And then obviously the loss to Eric Ayala last time out. So I don't know. I don't know what's up with Lee McGregor, but I think just because he lost to this guy, I wouldn't read too much into it. I think Liam Davies is a better all-round fighter than Lee McGregor, in my opinion, but that's just my opinion. All the best, though, to Lee McGregor, like I say. And moving now to the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. Sorry, not Lee McGregor. All the best to Liam Davies. Moving now to the Cosmopolitan of Las Vegas. This one's going to be live on DAZN. What have we got? What have we got? Floyd Schofield, 16-0. Very, very good fighter. He steps in the ring with Esturi Suero, who is 13-1. It's over 10 rounds there. Just want to have a little look at this guy who Floyd Schofield's fighting, because I haven't seen the name before, I don't think. But yeah, Floyd Schofield is definitely one to watch. And the main event there, I'd love to see him win it, but it's a tough, tough ask for our man Maxi Hughes, 26-6 with two draws. Definitely last time out beat George Kambosos, but didn't get the decision. He's back, though. You know, it's a golden opportunity on a Golden Boy show, but hope he's getting paid good, because it's going to be a tough one. He steps in with William Zepeda, 29-0, 25 KOs, one of the most exciting fighters to watch in the world. Like I say, would love to see Maxi Hughes somehow pull off a brilliant win. He's got so much momentum. He's absolutely turned his career around, but it's such a tall order. I just cannot see it at all. It's just a case of, I mean, hopefully he doesn't get stopped brutally, but I wouldn't want to bet against it. I think it's a really tough fight for him there, and he's probably going to get stopped, in all honesty. I don't think he's going to be able to get Zepeda to respect him. And when Zepeda doesn't respect the power that's coming at him, you're in for a long night, especially over 12 rounds. And moving now to the final card to mention, it goes down on Sunday, St. Patrick's Day, in Castlebar, Ireland. And that's probably a terrible, terrible Irish accent, but it's happening at the TF Royal Hotel. We're going to see return to the ring for Thomas. I think they call him, we're having a party, Carty, something like that. Anyway, 7-0, interesting heavyweight. He's back in a 6-rounder against Pavel Sauer, former opponent of Huey Fury, if I'm not mistaken. He's 19-19. We're also going to see friend of the show, Gary Spike O'Sullivan, 31-5 in a 10-rounder. No opponent just yet for him. Hopefully one gets sorted. And then the return to the ring for Dillian White, 29-3 in search of win number 30. He steps in with Christian Hammer, who's 27-10. Christian Hammer, these days, in my opinion, well and truly done and dusted. Again, a former opponent of Huey Fury. Seems to be a lot of patterns this week. A lot of former opponents of this guy. Then, oh, yeah, he's a former opponent of him as well. But, yeah, basically, Christian Hammer hasn't boxed since being stopped at Wembley Arena to Joe Joyce back in July of 2022. I was at that fight. He landed some great punches on Joyce, to be totally honest with you, but it wasn't too long before that he pretty much quit on his stall against Huey Fury. But then having said that, he did go the distance with Frank Sanchez right after losing to Huey Fury. So, again, it seems like sometimes he's just not up for it. Sometimes he is up for it, but almost 2 years out of the ring. Dillian White's got a point to prove. He's been out almost for the same amount of time. Hasn't boxed since the Jermaine Franklin win, which again was very kind of, you know, was a close fight. A lot of people felt he lost it. It was quite controversial. Beat Jermaine Franklin. Fight before that, obviously got stopped to Tyson Fury. Fight before that was when he got the revenge against Alexander Povetkin. So yeah, he's not in great form either. It doesn't make much sense, and I don't think many people are interested, but it is what it is. We've got to mention it. I, for one, do like Dillian White. I don't know, well, I don't like all the allegations I'm hearing. I don't know what's right and what's wrong, but he's a friend of the show. He's, you know, he was cool with me when he came on before. I respect him for coming on back in 2015. That was the only time I ever interviewed Dillian White. He came on the show when we'd been running for like 2 months. So he was boxing AJ like that week or the week after. So massive respect to him for coming on when he did. And that's why I got a bit of a soft spot for Dillian White. But like I say, all that aside, don't want to see him failing drugs tests. I don't know how many rounds his fight is scheduled for as well. It doesn't say it online. But all the best to him against Christian Hammer. And anyway, that brings the preview part to a close. In part one, we did the review part. Then we welcomed our special guest. In part two, we did the news. I've just wrapped up the preview part. The final thing for me to do is to come in with the outro, which I'll do in just a few seconds. Okay, and this wraps up episode 439 of the Box Hard Podcast. I've been your host, Joey Coastman. Eddie Chambers has been with me for the duration of the show. A huge shout out to this week's special guest, the new WBA featherweight champion of the world, Mr. Raymond Ford. The biggest thanks of all, though, goes out to you, the listeners. There has been one piece of news break whilst we've been recording the show, and it's the devastating news, really, that Josh Taylor, Jack Catterall 2, is off. An injury with Taylor has meant for the fight to be postponed. The date is going to be May the 25th, so it's been pushed back exactly 4 weeks, and it goes down again at the same venue in Leeds. For ticket holders, you can use the tickets for the revised date. They're still valid. And also you can seek a full refund as well. On the undercard, we were going to see as well the rematch between Peter McGraw and Jericho O'Quinn. That is going to take place on the same day, April the 27th. It's going to be going down at the Exhibition Centre in Liverpool. It's going to be a next-gen event, and we will see an undercard announced in due course for that one. That is about everything, though, from myself now. Enjoy your weekends, people. Stay safe, and we shall see you all again same time next week.